is further. So I wish you the best. I know that we're going to stay in touch, and I just want to thank you again, you know, publicly for being this authentic human being that I've really enjoyed working with and learning from over the last couple of years, and I can't wait to see how our friendship grows. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all for listening to News from the Boo. I hope you love Becky as much as I do. And Mike Crenshaw will be your host next week. Take care.
You were listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Right to Survive.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the comedy show Mental Health at the Mic on Wednesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Helium Comedy Club in Portland. Mental Health at the Mic is a comedy show to benefit stand-up comedy classes and socialization programs for Portlanders with mental health challenges and experiences. This two-hour comedy event will feature several stand-up comics who will perform jokes about their mental health experiences. Again, that's Mental Health at the Mic on Wednesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Helium Comedy Club, 1510 Southeast 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Mother, Daughter, Sister on Saturday, October 13th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Mother, Daughter, Sister exposes the Burmese military's practice of using rape as a weapon of war. Testimonies from survivors, witnesses, and activists explore the far-reaching impact of sexual violence upon women and communities as they call for justice and a unified stand for an end to impunity. A panel discussion will follow the film and includes the filmmaker and local community leaders and activists. Again, that's Mother, Daughter, Sister on Saturday, October 13th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Faye with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
All right, all right. Thank you for tuning in to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. Today we have a very interesting show today. We're talking about the bids. If you don't know what the bids are, tune in and we'll tell you about the Business Improvement District. Or you can call in at 503-231-8187 and ask questions or express your concerns.
And I'm Lisa Faye. I'm your other co-host for today's show. And I would like to have our guest introduce himself. Carissa, would you like to start off?
Sure. So my name's Carissa Modine, and I currently my paid job is I work at Sisters of the Road. And but I think my heart work has really been in trying to change and stop homelessness as it exists today. And yeah, so I'm excited to be on the show. I've been working with Right to Survive for a few years, so I'm excited to be on. Nervous too.
Welcome, Benjamin.
Hi, I'm Benjamin, and I am a Right to Survive member and a member of the Western Regional Advocacy Project, I've been a member for roughly 6 years now, 5-6 years. And I am also excited to be on. I have some experience being homeless, off and on for like 10-ish years, and hitchhiking and whatever. And I've seen a lot of abuses happen all over the place. And so I live to try to help address that and stop it.
And when you say abuses, what do you mean? Abuses to who? The environment, people, animals, or what?
All of the above. But principally, I've seen a lot of abuses taken from security guards or from police onto the homeless population, or just residents, property owners, business owners in the area who do everything they can to make people's lives even worse than they are.
So that brings up to our topic today. And so I know what a bid is. Carissa know what a bid. Lisa know what a bid. For those our listening audience who don't know what bids are, can you explain, any one of you all explain what bids are?
I think bids are purposely very confusing. And so to just say it as plainly as I see them is that they are the owners.
Called it like you see them.
Yeah. They are the owners of our neighborhoods. And they are businesses coming together and using public money and privatizing public space. So inherently, they are taking away public space and quote unquote beautifying, cleaning up, and but in real life, gentrifying and harassing people who are homeless and people who are poor.
So basically, they privatizing things that was public, like restrooms, sidewalk, pedestrian plaza, all of that. And we'll get into pedestrian plaza if you all don't know. And I guess that goes along with the bids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for those out there that don't know, we're referring to them as BIDs, which is short for Business Improvement Districts. That's their full name, Business Improvement Districts. So when you hear us say BIDs, we're just shortening a very long name.
Yeah, we're not at no auction or we're bidding on things, so we just want to clarify that.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to note that we'll say BIDs or BIDs, and I think as folks who are just learning about this or have known about it, I think it's really important to also recognize that they changed their name. And so for us to just understand the heart of what's happening is really what's going to be support us in changing what's going on.
Okay. You have anything to say on what a bid is?
You know, there's a lot of history to it, mm-hmm. to what bids are, and they've morphed and evolved over time. Originally, they started off as just economic improvement districts, you know, mechanisms to help raise real estate values for neighborhoods that were in poor condition, but have evolved into the megalith or ever-adapting hydra that it is today, that is completely taking over neighborhoods and downtown corridors and using them, that money, to do whatever they want, to lobby for whatever they want.
So how are bids structured?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll go ahead and try and take a stab. They are no actual stabbing happening in this facility. So they are effectively businesses in a kind of specified area. So they can be like block by block. They kind of can have a defined area that they are kind of pulling together business owners, usually larger businesses, not smaller businesses, but sometimes smaller businesses are very aware of what a bid is. But they are looped in and are, I guess, how do I say this without getting into too much language? I think it's just they are funded by the city. They are funded by our public resources, they are by the taxes that are happening on the property itself. And so this is something that businesses kind of organize together and have at a state level pulled down to a city level, have been able to organize to where they are just a conglomeration of businesses coming together using public money to then police and harass folks outside. But Benjamin, you want to add a little?
Yeah, that's a good summarization. A lot of their funding mechanisms come through property assessments. And they use different vernaculars depending on where you're at. For example, here in Portland, they call them property management license fees that raise the property values of surrounding areas and directly gentrify. And they go by so many different kinds of names. And they are in every major downtown corridor across the entire country. They act a lot like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, but for the city level. And if there was just one or two that we're talking about that existed, I think it would be a much more manageable problem. But because there are literally thousands across the nation, this is a much, much harder scale of a problem than most people realize.
And I think it's very insidious, which makes it even harder to start to unravel it.
Okay. I have a question. Maybe you could tell me how my idea of what you're saying sounds kind of rosy and good, like a business improvement district. They pay their taxes and the city gives them back their taxes to do what they want with it. So they're mending cracks in sidewalks, they're planting plants, they're painting buildings, they're putting up signage to invite people into the neighborhood. They hire an extra security guy to make sure that no one breaks into their building. So why are bids bad? It sounds like it's a great thing for cities. How do they? Why do you say they're bad, and why are they harmful to our most vulnerable?
I think, Lisa, if that's what they were created to do, then I think that would be awesome. But that's not what they're actually created to do. They were in kind of response. You know, I think as Benjamin was starting to say, is like they kind of grew out of the kind of neighborhoods that have been purposely unresourced. And so they come and they find their way in. And from that, just having those roots and understanding that that's the sort of negative impact that they just started in that. But I think inherently, I think it's, Benjamin, if I've got this number wrong, I think in California, there's been some research that's just recently come from Berkeley. And I think the number was 74% of the funds. So that the money that could be used to support a neighborhood is going to specifically hiring private security. So this is, you know, it would be great if that money was going to making sure that sidewalks were accessible so folks with accessibility devices could move along our sidewalks. But no, it's actually being used to tell people who have no homes to move along from the sidewalk because this is a place where people buy things.
And this is how and why bids work against houselessness.
That's that's definitely one of the ways. They also found in California that a good deal of the money that is generated is then further spent on lobbying on the state and city level in order to create more anti-homeless ordinances like sit-lie laws, like camping bans, things that punish people for being poor, punish people for acts of survival. And they actually found that this seems to violate the state constitution in California. and may very likely violate many other state constitutions around the country.
So we know that Right to Survive Radio is all about houselessness and the things that affect houselessness and create houselessness and treat houseless people as inhumane as possible. And after this break, we're going to get back and talk about the connection of the terrible bids doing with the vulnerable houseless people. Today we have Ben and Carissa, and we talk about our topic is the bid. If you have any questions or any concerns, you can call us at 503-231-8187. Again, call us. We want to hear from you. This is Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. The dial-in number is 503-231-8187. And we're back with our guests, and we're talking about how the bids literally create houselessness. I know when Right to Dream 2 was on the corner of 4th and Northwest Burnside, I talked with some of the business people, and Michael Wright told me this is how the bids operate. They influx a community with a lot of negativity, and I hate to say that. That's the way people look at it. They allow people to exist there like drug addicts or the ladies of the night, and then they push houseless people in there to bring the property value down, and then the bids come in, business improvement district come in and say, we're going to improve this, and then they do start gentrifying that neighborhood and improve it for a high price, which chase everybody out. And this is part of the broken windows theory. So can you all explain to us how this affect the bids, ongoing thing affects people that create houselessness?
Sure. You're absolutely right. Broken windows theory is what they base all of their stratagems on. Mm-hmm. The thing that crime is a contagion, that poverty is a contagion, and that when there's one broken window, that means if we let it continue to grow, it'll just mean all windows will be broken within a year or whatever time frame they're using. And that to touch somebody with poverty means it will spread all over the place. And so they do everything they can to stamp it out, starting with minor menial crimes or life quality of life crimes. Mm-hmm. And if they think that if they start there and they eradicate it at the root of it, then it'll be gone without the analysis that, of course, the root starts at banks and with those on top. But
okay, we have a call in, then we'll come back to you, Carissa. Okay, John.
Well, I want to thank everybody for working for We the People and people that are suffering from lack of housing or in between housing. And I want to remind everybody that, hey, we're all human beings, and most of us are citizens, and we still have the right to vote. And the vote is coming up November, I believe it's 6th. You can still register, I think, till October 16th. And I've talked to people on the street, hey, if you got a friend, you can use their address. I think you can use even a P.O. box. And maybe you folks have some ideas, but I think it's so important we vote, because these Republicans at the federal level, they are a fascist party, and they do not care about any of us. And they are trying to infiltrate the state of Oregon right now with a bunch of phony laws attacking women's rights to control their own bodies, etc. So please vote. It'll make you feel good, too, that you belong to a bigger society.
And so, John, do you think what you just said is a mechanism of the Business Improvement District?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you think that what you just told us and the listening audience, is this a mechanism of the Business Improvement District?
I think, let people know of all sorts. Hey, I'm a voter too. Just because I'm houseless doesn't mean that I'm lesser than. Just keep fighting. Fight the power. The power is the government, especially the federal government, how money flows to us. And if we don't vote, it gets worse.
Okay, one of our guests have feedback. Let's talk to Carissa.
Hey, it was John, yeah?
Right.
Hey, John. Thanks for calling. I just wanted to say, you know, be great to have a conversation with you and try and connect this, you know, to what we're talking about with business improvement districts and how we can, you know, I don't know if I always believe in the vote, but like how we can bring the vote and bring people engaged in our neighborhoods. And so if you want to catch a cup of Joe in the cafe, Sisters of the Road, come on by.
Sisters of the Road?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've lived in a van for several months, and I've been real close to being houseless in Portland, and I know it's real easy to, with the average checking account anymore, what, about $500? We're all there, near there. We lose a job. And so thanks. Sisters of the Road. I love Sisters of the Road.
Okay. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number for Right to Survive Radio Show, and we're talking about Business Improvement District. And before our musical break, we were talking about how does this fit in with creating houselessness, and once it's created, how does it affect houseless people? Correct.
Oh, yes. Back on topic. Yeah, here we go. I think that it's just really important to make the connection that, you know, anti-homeless laws are really laws that are about folks sustaining their lives. Mm-hmm. And so this is resting, sleeping, existing, moving, being poor with their lives on their backs, walking around, sharing food. These are all things that are being criminalized. And so, business improvement districts, the growth of them correlates directly with the growth in laws that are particularly targeting people. And so to... I think also, you know, back to the thought of like, why are bids bad? It's that we're seeing this, you know, inextricable like connection. Mm-hmm. And, it just speaks to the class warfare that's happening, and that we really need to make sure that we, you know, aren't as insidious as this gets. We really need to make sure that we understand that this is very connected.
And so this go way, 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 way back to when let's go say the biblical days when they was selling stuff at the temple, and Jesus came in and kicked the Business Improvement District people out from selling thing, and peace be upon him, Prophet Muhammad did the same thing. And I know recently I was going through my DVD case, and I saw a movie called The Gangs of New York, and that was similar to the same thing, how the business was paying all these policemen or these gangs to protect themselves, to protect their business. And that's what's really happening now. Here and now, the same, different flavor, same label.
At the expense of the unhoused.
Yes.
Yeah. These bids, BIDs, they donate millions and millions of dollars to police forces all across the country. In Denver, it's in the millions, but in L.A., it's in the tens of millions, mm-hmm. you know, and they have some very serious influence on who the police target and how they target them. And generally, as we have seen here in Portland, 52%, which is probably a low ball number, of the amount of arrests last year were specifically homeless folks, as mm-hmm. well as, you know, the rise in police, people, you know, the police budget increasing. And so... They've been giving very clear directions of how they want to move forward as a police force. And now that there's so much scrutiny around the police, though, I think that they've realized there's a good strategy to diversify the blame. And so there's been also the additional hiring of all these private police forces as well. And
that shows no accountability, because police had to have accountability, but these private police don't.
Right. There's very, very little oversight or accountability to how these private police forces operate. And I think they kind of like it that way. You know, there's a lot of people in the game. Even transportation departments are a part of that. And they all work together.
And so, and Carissa, you mentioned something about that the bid create all these laws. And I know it's 224 laws combined in 11 cities in Oregon that criminalize houseless people just for surviving.
So how many of them do you think were influenced by bids?
I mean, I can't speak to that, you know, without, like, with absolute certainty, of course. But I think that these laws and the increase of them are from the same jib. It's about making malls everywhere. It's about making everything privatized and making everything look like everything else, and in just whitewashing you know, upper class washing everything. And so I think that that's with the direction of, I just got distracted there. First time on the radio.
You thought they was coming in after you.
I just think that the influence of bids is that they are, I mean, maybe they didn't create them, but they for sure did, you know, are enforcing them. And so I think that's something to know that I see. And that has been researched.
So these laws that, I mean, when I go downtown and they have in their window restroom for paying customers or patronizing customers, and so if a houseless person and they privatizing all the restroom, what do they do? Is this one of those laws by the business that created so people can have survival crimes? They had to use the restroom, where would they go? So how that's affect our community. I wonder if I was walking down with one of my grandchildren and I don't have any money, just touring, and they had to use the restroom, could they patronize? Could they go into that place and use the restroom?
You are talking to someone who is extremely passionate about hygiene access.
That's why I brought it up.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Ibrahim, as a black Muslim man, I think that he would probably struggle. And then, you know, no, you may not be allowed to be in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. But I think back to business improvement districts, I think that that sort of culture of, you know, I was walking by a Subway downtown and it said you had to have a minimum purchase of $4 to be able to use the bathroom.
That's crazy.
And
$4.
Exactly. And so, I mean, it's that sort of energy, that culture that's created by businesses that would just be continued to be enforced within business improvement districts.
Okay, we're going to have a music break. And we'll come back with our guests, Benjamin and Carissa, on bids. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number. If you have any concerns or questions, please put us and our guests to work.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without water, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me.
Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Our call-in number tonight is 503-231-8187, and we're talking about business improvement districts with Carissa Modine and Benjamin
Donlin.
I'm sorry, I know I'd screw one of you guys' names.
You don't want to say
tonight.
Darlene or Donlin.
Okay. How many business improvement districts are there currently in Portland?
Ooh, that's a tricky question. There are 2 3/4. And I say the 3/4 because there's one currently trying to be established right as we speak. But there are 2. Clean and Safe, and Go Lloyd.
Go Lloyd.
Go Lloyd.
Okay, tell us about Go Lloyd.
Oh, you know, they're just doing their thing. Go Lloyd is up there by the Lloyd District, you know, where the big mall thing is.
And Clean and Safe?
Clean and Safe is actually one of the largest BIDs in the country. I think it's 218 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it has some particularities with it that are interesting because it has an interesting history. They exist. They have these people that walk around and clean stuff up, and then they have people that walk around and stalk homeless people with guns. So they're
all of these communities or these districts have an effect on poor people and people of color. And I know I learned earlier this year that the Lloyd Center have its own court and district attorney, DA, up in the third floor of the Lloyd Center, where houseless people and people of color are targeted. And once you go in there, you can see them following the people around. And if you do happen to get in trouble committing a survival crime, they take you straight up to the third floor. They try you there and then. In downtown Pedestrian Plaza, is that a bid mechanism also?
Yeah, and that's a bit tricky to talk about, but there is what is known as a pedestrian plaza here in Portland. Mm-hmm. What's unique about it is that it specifically targets homeless people. And when it was created, the mayor specifically said that this does not target homeless people. But it's weird he had to go out of his way to say that. But, you know, essentially if you spit, lie down, sleep, busk.
Sneeze wrong.
Yeah, over by Voodoo Donuts in downtown.
So you control your sneezing, right?
Yeah. Then you can be excluded from the area.
Excluded for sneezing.
Yeah. And you can't come back, right? And so the reason why this is connected to the bids, if this was an isolated incident, then it wouldn't be a big deal, other than it happened in a place where people busk all the time and try to make money. Is that this was created by an entity in New York City known as the Times Square Downtown Alliance, which is one of the biggest bids in the country or has a lot of influence. The head of the New York Transportation Department at the time implemented this pedestrian plaza right there in Times Square, which effectively pushed a lot of the homeless out of Times Square, where they wanted unlimited commerce to always happen. And it also, in a beneficial way, got rid of car congestion. And so that's the way they frame it, is that, you know, cars and bicycles and pedestrian access takes an ultimate precedence over even people sleeping, even over people trying to survive. And, you know, it's a really tricky, very dangerous narrative that, for lack of a better word, hipsters tend to get behind. And this has been adapted in many different ways. It can be green ways, like they have, you know, greenifies a city and makes it all about plants and trees, but ignores the fact that they had to remove campsites in order to make it happen. And there's, you know, this sorts of strategy has always taken place. You look at light rails and the history behind light rail systems, or like TriMet. They used to be poor neighborhoods until they bulldozed them so they can put down, you know, the max rails, and then they built up the houses around them called affordable housing, but without ignoring the whole point that they got rid of the poor people and gentrified the area so that they could say they're helping the poor.
Mm-hmm. And saying, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, because BID caused gentrification, and gentrification causes houselessness. And then when you houseless, that's why they privatizing these certain area, because if you houseless, no matter if you live in a house or car, attend and what is still the public, and how can they exclude the public from public property?
I would love to respond to that. Yeah. I think that the business improvement district's like role also in, like, I think a lot of bids, I think even very much locally, very much tout their horn about connecting and supporting social services. Mm-hmm. But it's very much with the underlying tone of excluding them from the area, excluding folks who are homeless from the area. And this, you know, this is very much, it comes out in ways of saying, you know, well, if it's very NIMBY, it's very like, if you feed them, they will come mentality. and that's, you know, being, you know, being in a bid district, as my workplace, at my workplace, we are in a, within the business improvement district. Mm-hmm. And, it's very difficult to see the sort of, hypocrisy that comes with saying we are supporting, you know, social services to help people, when at the same time they're saying that they are taking people's stuff, taking pictures of people. You know, this is, it's extremely problematic, and and I think from the outside looking in, you know, again, back to what Lisa was saying earlier, like, wow, bids sound like they could be good. They're helping neighborhoods, but at its core, it's rotten. It's rotten.
It's rotten.
Yeah. It's rotten.
Yeah. If we wanted to talk about NIMBYs, like, conservatives have nothing on the neoliberalism of what these bids are when it comes to NIMBYism. They're about as extreme as it gets.
Okay, we're going to go to a music break, and when we come back, there's something brewing on the Central East Side that we would like to dig into. Welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And in tonight's Right to Survive show, we are talking about business improvement districts, or BIDs. And we are here with Carissa and Benjamin, who have longstanding experience working with RAP, Western Regional Advocacy Project, and with Right to Survive. So they know
and
a little.
Sisters of the Road.
And of course, how can I forget Sisters of the Road? So how can I say this? I will just dig right in. Something's brewing on the southeast side, on the central east side of Portland. And we've been trying to study up and learn what's happening. Would you like to start us off, Benjamin?
Sure. Yeah. So to bring it more locally of how BIDs affect here in Portland, they're a little bit different, though. They're called Enhanced Service Districts, the ESDs. And there's currently two, right? Like we said earlier, there's Clean and Safe and Go Lloyd. But there's a third forming right now as we speak, called the Central East Side Industrial District. And it's roughly 77 blocks over here, right on the east side of the river, just right when you cross, south of Burnside. And its entire purpose is to manage and exclude the homeless in the area, which they have identified as a problem. And, you know, it's not looking good. It's looking like it's going to happen. And there's already an allotted budget of $2.8 million for them to designate to security in the area, which is Northwest Enforcement, who, as they have said, will definitely not be doing enforcement, but right. It's in their name.
Can you repeat that amount again? For
2.8 million. So that's 1.4 million, I believe, that they had privately raised, and then a matching donation from the city through some kind of parking permit abatement program.
All to bring up security and create something to create homeless exclusion districts against the houseless people. And $2.8 million. You know how many attainable housing that they can create so they won't be people living on the street? Yeah. So they reasoning and they thinking made a wrong turn in Albuquerque. You think so?
it's a lot of tiny houses. I'll
yeah,
say that.
I know.
Maybe an apple fell on their head in their discussions. It is the Northwest. Now, when we're talking about this enhanced service district on the Central East Side, I saw a map outline of what the perimeters may be, and it looks to me that the St. Francis area and the area along the Esplanade, the waterfront, where and over to like 3rd and Harris area, where we all know houseless people congregate or pitch tents, are out there surviving, would be fall within their parameters. Is that correct?
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of effects of this too, you know, for everybody in that area, because of the property management license fees that will be taxed on to all the property owners. They will in turn have to raise the rental values of all their property, which means that this area is going to be prime zone for gentrification.
If the building construction around here has not been evident enough.
Mm-hmm.
So how do business improvement districts or enhanced service districts fall into the strategic plan of an area that's set for gentrification?
That's a good question. The current city plan, I believe, is the Central City 2035 plan that was unveiled on June of 2018 or July. It was, so it's very recently adopted, and not a lot of people know about it quite yet, and they probably won't for a while. But so to talk about the history of Central East Side a little bit, it's a bit of an industrial, not wasteland. What's another word?
Wasteland. How else can you put it?
in terms of an urban developer, it is underutilized, right? It's underutilized, and the only activation going on is homeless people surviving, homeless folk finding ways to survive. And that's a problem, right? Because there's too much money being lost, oozing out.
2.8 million.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to go into what could possibly be an infinite amount of benefit by gentrifying and forcing the houseless people out and raising rents and fees.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow.
So they that's what they want for this area is they want to make that money. And how do they do that when there's too many people that are not making money for them?
And so they say houseless people don't patronize this city, but inadvertently they do, because they misusing people to make money to create these industrial east side or central east side things. Okay. Yeah,
I was just going to say that I was just kind of in my head over here thinking about just the interconnectedness of it all, and just thinking about, you know, like, wow, like business improvement districts must be so proud of themselves for creating jobs.
So sad.
And I was just really sitting with like how is it that these can exist, you know? And I really think it is because, you know, as much as I want to, blame a business owner, I really think it's us in these neighborhoods who live here, who have, you know, have some say in the neighborhood, who work within these businesses. I think it's on us too, you know, maybe in a different way, but it's really on us. And I guess I've just been stewing over here on that.
So I was told once that one of the developers over there is spearheading this thing. And I don't care. Is this Sad Brad that's doing this? Sad Brad.
Well,
without getting too.
Let's not call anybody out.
But yes, it's that guy.
It's that guy.
It's Beam Development Corporation.
So this was the developer and the neighborhood that didn't want Right to Dream 2 to come over there, but some of that neighborhood wanted, it was split down the middle. And so, as usual, the people with the most money, not the most voices, have control over the geological area where people reside in. So that's okay, Ben.
Yeah, they went to the state and got the state to repeal the Right to Dream 2's move. And it's specifically that same person and group around that person that is implementing this new ESD, Enhanced Service District. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that they
I know you don't want to name names, but come after me, Ibrahim Mubarak.
I mean, it really speaks to how much free time they have to invest in this idea that if they somehow ruin people's lives, if they make people's lives worse, instead of actually investing into ideas that work, like tiny house communities, or finding safe parking spaces, or
car camping.
Mm-hmm. Car camping, yeah. Like, really investing in the community and investing in the ideas that are generated by the community, rather than these top-down approaches that clearly have not worked for the last 40 years.
A friend of mine recently said, like, you know, folks who are homeless are made so visible when there's something wrong in a neighborhood, and made so invisible when trying to, like, envision a better neighborhood, you know? Mm. And so just thinking about how that blame works, how that sort of, we're going to keep doing the same stuff over and over again.
I'm glad you paused.
Because, yeah, we're not hearing from the experts.
So why not add a obtainable housing unit in the mix there if they don't want to see houseless people in the neighborhood as they gentrify it?
Not in my neighborhood.
Oh, that's a NIMBY. Why can't be a YIMBY? Yes, so, in my neighborhood. Oh. If people work together and come up with sustainable solutions.
But we did. We created business improvement districts. We enhanced security in the area. We have sweeps in our city that go on that target houseless people, that do a shuffling game from one corner to the next over and over again. We're solving the issue of the houseless in our neighborhoods with our bid resource money.
I think that's a good point of what you say about in our neighborhoods, because what is the effect, right? They get pushed to yet another neighborhood who then implements similar strategies to push them yet to another neighborhood and to shuffle people around until they become desperate and they start doing anything to survive, because people will cling to life. They will do everything they can to survive. And, you know, that is what's happening now, I think. And it's very, very unfortunate that people don't think outside of the parameters of what is immediately around them.
So 503-231-8187 is the call-in number for Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And when we come back after this music break, we'll see what can we do to solve this problem on these bids.
Coming to the music,
welcome back to Right to Survive Radio here on KBOO 90.7 FM. The call-in number tonight is 503-231-8187. And we have a caller on the line. Tim, good evening.
Good evening, sisters and brothers of the revolution. I have an idea how we, the people, can make this change. I used to be an organizer, and back on the West Coast, East Coast, there was a group called Worcester Common Cause. And what they did was organize a group of homeless, and not just homeless, but low income and some homeless, and they would pool their resources, buy a building, and renovate it and live in it. And the people living in it would own it as a cooperative and manage it as a cooperative. So you're talking a large building with several living units, a lot of them. And that worked well. But what they did was they organized the group first, and they didn't abandon them. They stayed with the group, and they advised them. They hooked them up to resources and stuff. But it was the people themselves who made the connections and did the work, and then they trained them in how to organize it as a co-op, a democratic co-op. And that was a very successful project. I don't see why that could not be replicated in Portland or any other damn place. And this, you know, this gives people the doing it ourselves instead of waiting for some government or some church or some thing.
Tim, I think we agree with you.
Yeah, the power empowers. And that's what we want to do, is empower ourselves. The poor, and we got to make it interracial, brother and sister. We can't do it, you know, in isolated groups, whether it's the white nation, the black nation. No, we got to make it a multicolored.
Did
you say a cult?
Yeah,
all power to the people.
We got to do it together. Remember, man, in Nazi Germany, they came from one group and no one said nada. And if we allow that to happen, if we fall apart, they're going to pick us up one by one. And right now, our government has the right to just sweep us off the street. And Black Lives Matter is now a terrorist organization. And this is not America. This is not the country we supposedly believe in or ever had hopes of being. I know we never were a democracy. We never were.
No, we started off as a republic, and we're going to thank you. We have more people to talk. We thank you for your input. But if you notice in the houseless community, it is multifaceted. It is different people. It is women. It is the LGBT community. It is youth. It is black. It is people of color. It is white. So when we fight for the houseless people, we don't do one specific gender or race or ethnicity or spirituality. We fight for all. So we're going to go back to our guest in this last 6 minutes. And we want to talk about the Berkeley report.
I did want to say real quick about the caller.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. The speechwriter for Martin Luther King Jr. would often say, "We are citizens of a country that does not yet exist," which I completely believe. The America that they told us about doesn't yet exist. Yeah.
It was American dream. That's what I'm still dreaming.
Okay, let's spend the last 2 or 3 minutes talking about the Berkeley report. Who did the Berkeley report, and can you tell us a little bit about what is in it?
Yeah, so there was a group of students over 3 years, law students at, you know, University of Berkeley, I think is the words for it, and out of the Policy Advocacy Clinic. And they did outreach and extensive research and understanding and developing what we have right now, which is the most in-depth research of understanding what the heck a bid is, and looking at correlations of more of them existing and more anti-homeless laws coming into place. And so I think it'd be really great for folks to get their hands on this information. And Benjamin, do you know how folks can read this?
Yeah, if it's on the Western Regional Advocacy Project website at raphome.org, and that's raphome.org. And additionally, if you go to the Berkeley Law Policy Advocacy Clinic website, it will be on there, ideally.
Yeah, and the title of the report is Homeless Exclusion Districts, How California... It's funny how diction works like that. How California business... All right, here we go. How California business improvement districts use policy advocacy and policing practices to exclude homeless people from public space.
Right.
And I think something really important to note is, and I'll just go ahead and just skim this really quick, but some of the recommendations and conclusions they have are, I think, really important for us as people mm-hmm. on the ground to start getting language around and an understanding. So, you know, we really think that BIDs, or here in Portland, Enhanced Service Districts, ESDs, should have greater accountability to all residents and visitors in their districts, including folks who are homeless. And so repealing all security. And that would be something, I just added that little last bit, but I think
that sounds good.
Yeah. And also just a call to the city to just more carefully scrutinize bids and sharing more of their activities, such as their the connection between police and bids mm-hmm. and making sure that their whole establishment as a bid is more accessible to the public and the public is more aware that these are forming.
Yeah. One of the other recommendations is also to prohibit the bids from spending property assessment revenue on policy advocacy and on security. But, you know, personally, I would take that even further and be like, prohibit them from even collecting property assessment revenue. And, you know, because these entities, these businesses should be able to stand on their own 2 feet. You know, they should really be able to pick themselves up by their bootstraps. And, you know, like, honestly, if we're being real here, like, they have all the privilege to be able to do that. But instead, they take from the public, and then they advocate immediately against the public's interests. So
if people want to learn more about what's going on with Sisters of the Road or Rat to Survive or... Rap, can you give us a little heads up, like any meetings or ways to plug in?
Yeah, so we're doing some learning about this within Sisters of the Road. You're welcome to come noon on to a roadies meeting. But I think an even better place is going to Right to Survive and 5 to 7, second and fourth Thursdays at Sisters of the Road Cafe. But also, if you're just looking for initial, like if you're wanting this report or you're wanting to sit down and talk about it or share your own experiences, I would definitely reach out to OregonHBR@gmail.com. So how do you spell Oregon? OregonHBR@gmail.com.
And for anybody within the Central East Side Industrial District area, please look into this personally. Try to talk to any property owners, business owners, or just residents of the area that this is happening, this is coming, and that this will affect the real estate values. This will cause your rent to go up.
And when is it being voted on by council?
It is being, I believe they're going to council to speak to council on November 7th. So if you have some free time on November 7th, please go to city council and voice your displeasure about this.
I'll bring coffee.
So you've been listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And tune in next month for another keen topic about houselessness. Thank you all.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Women's Reproductive Rights Now on Sunday, October 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Sunnyside Community House, located at 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. Women's Reproductive Rights Now is an educational event to support activists fighting for reproductive rights. Speakers include Judith Arcana, Dr. Patricia Kohlberg, Reverend Emily Champagne, and Sally Castillo of Planned Parenthood. There will also be videos, tabling, food, and more. Again, that's Women's Reproductive Rights Now on Sunday, October 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center in Portland. Food for the Soul is a potluck in the park benefit and will feature performances by Tom Grant, Michael Allen Harrison, Norman Sylvester, Shelley Rudolph, and Julia McKay. Potluck in the Park has been serving weekly meals every Sunday to anyone in need since 1991. Again, that's Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center.